Do you need to wake up in the morning? Because if you need to wake up in the morning and your regular crappy commie swill's not doing it, you need to have a drink of Black Rifle Coffee. Black Rifle Coffee is the best coffee out there. Everyone else who disagrees, well, they hate all things happy and good and probably Eagles in America and football and everything else. Black Rifle Coffee, though, it's just really good coffee. They have the best roast out there, the best blends out there. It's veteran owned. They employ retired and active duty veterans, and they've been working with the Boot Campaign, one of the most renowned veteran focused nonprofits in the nation. And the Boot Campaign helps to provide customized care to treat the root causes of the invisible wounds of war, things like post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injury, chronic pain, insomnia, all kinds of stuff. And so with every sale of their ready-to-drink coffee, they're giving proceeds to the Boot Campaign to help veterans through these means. And they have a ton of different flavors with the ready-to-drink coffees. You can get the 12-packs as part of the coffee club. So the coffee club, if you're unfamiliar, you sign up, you choose your select roast, your frequency of shipment, and you never, ever run out of coffee. And you can choose several roasts. You don't have to just, you know, chain yourself to one. And you never run out of coffee. Free shipping right on your doorstep. I'm telling you, it's more affordable than the bougie stuff in the supermarket aisle. So Black Rifle Coffee, they're committed to serving the veteran community. Let's all continue to make a difference. Raise a can together. Fuel Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Join the coffee club today.
Obviously, you know that there's a public perception that, and you're clarifying this now, but there's a public perception that that was part of a apology tour, if you will, that this had been said online. There was all of the criticism. There was advertisers leaving. We talked to Bob Iger today.
I hope
today.
They stop.
You hope?
Don't advertise.
You don't want them to advertise?
No.
What do you mean?
If somebody's going to try to blackmail me with advertising, blackmail me with money, go f*** yourself.
Yeah?
But go f*** yourself. Is that clear? I hope it is.
I mean, who doesn't feel that way? Honestly. I mean, who doesn't? Who among us? Welcome to the show. Dana Lash here with you. Thank God it's Thursday. We're almost through this insane week because it keeps getting crazier. You can listen, by the way, coast to coast. And I hope that you sign up for the newsletter over at Substack because there's always good stuff that goes out over at Substack on the reg. So make sure you go and check that out as well. Lots of good stuff that happens there. So in the meantime, this is one of many things that we're going to be discussing today, including getting into some of this, because we got to talk about, I'm fascinated with the Kissinger stuff, because while, and I'm not going to dive into this, so let's not throw elements up and make a big thing about it right now, that'll come later, but I'm fascinated with the dichotomy that's in the press right now of Jimmy Carter being sick, and he's at his wife's visitation, and he's like on the doorstep of death. And the way that he's perceived, received, and feted by the left, and then Henry Kissinger. And I'm fascinated by this. And I want to dive into it a little bit later, because I feel like that's also, yesterday we talked about Rorschach test in the context of, you know, having this discussion, whether it's about, you know, the either masks or a whole bunch of other host of issues. I think this is like another Rorschach test. I really do feel that way. I think it's another Rorschach test to kind of see where people sort of really are with foreign policy and what they, you know, where what they really believe. Anyway, so we're going to get into all of it. The audio that we started with, though, what was this? This was like some New York Times event. I actually don't care enough to know what it is, but what is it? What you were going to tell me, Kane?
It was the deal book? Was
that the deal book? What is even that?
I have no
idea. It was some stupid New York Times thing. I don't know. That's all I know. They had him there. Our friends over at Patch Ops immediately made a soundbite out of this. But this is the soundbite that's getting all of the attention. I actually don't even think that that's like, I mean, I love that soundbite and I completely agree with him, because he's referencing all of these advertisers that are being pressured by the left to pull advertising on X because they accused him falsely of saying something of tweeting something anti-Semitic, which he absolutely did not. And I find it fascinating that all of these actual anti-Semites that have been out there excusing pro-Hamas and doing all of this stuff, I've been fascinated in watching this because they project onto him. And so, I mean, I completely agree with what he said there. He also said, which I thought this was a brilliant soundbite as well. Audio soundbite 8. I think this is perhaps my favorite because he was having a conversation with the moderator about these virtue signaling Pharisees, for the lack of a better way to put it. Listen to this.
And what I see all over the place is people who care about looking good while doing evil. F*** them.
It's amazing. I love it. But he made a good point, though. I mean, he's like, yes. I mean, you know, they're talking about doing good, but they care more about looking good they care more about looking good than actually doing good. And they want to look good while they do good, but they'd rather look good than do good is essentially what it is. I loved that soundbite. And he's right. He's right in this. People who care about looking good, but they're doing evil. And I really feel like in a lot of instances, especially with politics today, it's more about looking good than actually doing anything good. I go back to the Kissinger thing. I mean, there's some complications, obviously. There's some nuance. He killed a lot of commies, as my friend Kurt reminded everybody. He did. He also, yes, I get you. And I think it's completely fair to say that the dude also enabled China to be what it is today. I mean, I think that's completely fair to say. But in the world of geopolitics, what in the geopolitical sphere, normally it's not so incredibly easy to make the easy call. I mean, he was, you know, a guy who was a foreign, he got into foreign policy theory, and then he was also a diplomat, and he wore a couple of different hats. And so one wasn't the other, and one would make different moves more so than the other. And there's a lot of nuance here. I think concern that he had at the time, particularly as it relates to China and brokering or breaking rather this Russian-Chinese relationship, thinking that you could fracture communism and that would do it in, you can't. I mean, there has to be constant vigilance. And of course, that wasn't helped by the administrations after, particularly the Clinton administration and the World Trade Organization and everything else. I mean, we could go on and on. Their admittance into that helped really fuel their rise to the top almost faster than anything. But ultimately, I mean, he did lay the groundwork. I mean, that's something that, I mean, I think it's completely fair to acknowledge that. And so the reason that I brought up at the very start of this, Carter, is when you look at what's happening in the Middle East, one of the reasons that we're dealing with all of the nonsense that we're dealing with in the Middle East is because of Jimmy Carter. He was one of the worst presidents that we've ever had in American history. I loathe Jimmy Carter. I loathe FDR the most. Politically, I loathe Jimmy Carter. And I also think that his virtue is a veneer. And I really loathe, however, FDR. But we have it. Democrats, they love to romanticize like the most ridiculous people amongst them. But they're freaking out over Kissinger. Did you see Rolling Stones? Hold up. Did you guys see Rolling Stone? My gosh, this was crazy. I mean, there were people who were just absolutely just cheering on this guy's death. And I mean, just wild. Rolling Stone went at him. I mean, they were not happy. They were happy that he was dead, but I pulled this piece up because I'm not getting it up. But this is what happens when you work radio, TV, guys. We don't do teleprompters. But they went at him. They Rolling Stone went at him. And I've been watching all of these hot takes from people all morning. Well, really, it started last night. And nobody, they the way that they talk, oh, he left so many people dead, you know, in Cambodia, et cetera, et cetera. Hi, have you heard of the Khmer Rouge? Have you heard of Pol Pot? They acted like they weren't there. They weren't factors. It was all just Henry Kissinger. It was Henry Kissinger, Kane. Did you know that?
All by himself.
I mean, there were no monumentally murderous regimes down there that were. Have they heard of the killing fields? Have they heard of the tree in the killing fields? The tree where the commies used to take babies from moms and smash them against the tree, beat them against the tree like one would a rug on a stick. and then discard the dead bodies. But, you know, Kissinger displaced people. Kissinger killed people. I'm not kidding you. That's what's been the majority of the hot takes. And but yet they're lionizing somebody like Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter, whose moves in the 70s created the destabilization in Iran that you see now. Jimmy Carter. We have to deal with the Houthis. We have to deal with all of, we have to deal with Hezbollah. We have to deal with Hamas, all which are funded by Iran because of who helped them to get to, who helped the Ayatollah? Who helped all of that? That was Carter. I love reading biographies on presidents. It's one of my, I love historical books. If I'm going to read a book, I'm going to read a historical book because so much written today is just absolute trash. And I was reading one. I read it a couple of years ago. I actually pulled it out as soon as I heard he was sick and I was rereading it. And I mean, it's so eye-opening. It's amazing the stuff that isn't taught either in high school or college about why there's so much that contributed to the destabilization in the Middle East. But interestingly enough, it's like there's a blackout on Carter's participation in it. Now, the reason I bring this up, and yes, Carter, yeah, I mean, Kissinger wasn't president. Carter was. Carter was a president. Kissinger wasn't a president. Yes, Kissinger was, you know, incredibly influential and helped guided the foreign policy of several different presidential administrations. But yet he wasn't the top guy. He wasn't the top guy. He made a lot of moves, and he was kind of celebrated. I mean, he was kind of he was pretty popular with Hollywood's elite. I saw a picture of him with Elizabeth Taylor. I guess it was back in the 70s or something that it was taken. And interestingly, I read another quip about all of this where, because he got the Nobel Peace Prize, right? I mean, for if you think that that's, you know, the Nobel Peace Prize. But he got the Nobel Peace Prize. And he also shared it with, he shared it with Lou Doc, who was one of the guys that he sat with, and they were brokering the peace agreement. They were brokering the peace agreement and trying to end, you know, fighting in Vietnam, although did it, you know, the communists did it in. But the whole thing was that he was making a lot of these decisions that he was writing the checks that Nixon's butt had to cash. Not that Nixon was, I mean, non-intelligent. He was incredibly intelligent. But a lot of the foreign policy decisions that were guided by Kissinger, I mean, he wrote them and Nixon cashed in with his backside. And I was reading this story where I don't know who I'm trying to remember who it was that wrote this. It was what there's a million things written about Kissinger today. But I was reading this piece and they were saying that, you know, when he got the Nobel Peace Prize, Nixon actually had won the Nobel Peace Prize. And he, you know, thought, you know, president of the United States, he'd probably get it. He didn't get it. And Kissinger got it, sharing it. The other guy declined it because he said that it hadn't been implemented. But Nixon gave him, it was described as a very gallant congratulations, but people who knew Nixon well could perceive the hurt because it had cost him dearly, the foreign policy that had been guided by Kissinger. And I just thought that was a very interesting insight, a little interesting insight into this. But I cannot get over the contrast between Carter and Middle East and the reception and the fetting that the left does, and then what we see with Kissinger. It's just, it fascinates me. Now, another contrast is happening tonight. I'm not doing a live debate of it because I'm actually writing I'm drafting a big old long piece, and it's been so crazy. It's taken me a couple of days to do because I feel it's basically, you have these two ideologies that are contrasted so perfectly on stage tonight. I do think it's smart for DeSantis to go right at Gavin Newsom. I think it's smart. I think that it shows that he's not going to hide, and he's going to fight, and he's going to go after the guy who really, Joe Biden might be president of the United States, but the up-and-coming most influential member of the Democrat Party is Gavin Newsom. And I don't think the right is taking this seriously. And they're about to get Obama'd. Not kidding you. I'm not the only one who thinks this. Coming up later in the program, a lifelong Californian who's followed California politics and has known about Gavin Newsom since, you know, people talking about it now on blogs and podcasts could spell his name. She's going to join me to give insight into exactly this, because she says the right's being done with us. They think that he's inconsequential because we view him as being silly, which is true. We do. I mean, good grief, French Laundry. It looks ridiculous when he went there with the lockdowns and everything else. But he's dangerous. And also, you want to talk about baggage? This dude has so much baggage. I'm not even talking about the political baggage of the high-speed rail. I'm not talking about the boondoggle of crime and drugs and everything else that's happening in California. I think she says he's still having an affair very publicly right now. And there's political implications to that. So she's going to join us. Jennifer Van Laar coming up. She's with Red State. She's going to join us to talk about that. We've got this debate tonight. We're going to pregame it a little bit. We also have a bunch of other things to get into. Big tech and Musk is saying, again, what everybody else is thinking and maybe saying privately, but not like on a stage in front of Bob Iger. Wasn't he right there in the audience? That was so great. So we have a lot to hit today, and you don't want to miss a single bit of today's program. A great company. They make their stuff right here in the U.S. of A. And because I'm particular about stuff, they also... NIMI also doesn't test on animals, and they don't include parabens or any of the stuff that actually there's been a lot of studies on. It's real bad for your skin. NIMI Skincare, they use great ingredients, only the best ingredients that you can get, the peptides, the retinol, the vitamin C, so much more. And they're 100% guaranteed. They ship right to your door. So they're made in the U.S. of A. using the best ingredients. And it's the people who own it think like you. Now, the reason that NIMI Skincare started is because a lot of us were upset to see dudes advertising skincare products to women because women's needs change throughout the decades. What you use in your 30s, you didn't use in your 20s and vice versa. And NIMI realizes this. NIMI Skincare realizes this. And so that's why they formulate their products to address the needs of women, right? And so, for instance, the Hydrate and Protect Ultimate Routine, this includes NIMI Skincare's most popular anti-aging products. It cleanses, moisturizes, protects the skin. You can build your basket how you want to. And visit them online and do so. You don't have to compromise your values to have great skin. And they get, NIMI Skincare gets men's needs and women's needs entirely different. Visit NIMIskincare.com. That's N-I-M-I skincare.com. And use promo code Dana to get 10% off of your order. Your skin will thank you.
Even if you got a raise last year, you're still going backwards. Prices have come down, but they are not lower than they were last year. If you hear that violent crime is down 6%, it's still 25% higher than it was in 2019. Don't get hit by the spin zone. Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So... Paste, which is another crappy magazine, acquires Jezebel, a website named after a whore, and they prepare for a relaunch. Do you like the way I'm doing the news, Kane? I haven't had enough coffee today because our coffee machine is breaking down and I'm about to die and take everybody with me. The guy, Karen, remember the Karen guy who went after the little kid? That company, they're all related. Like, it's all a big incestual. They're all like aging hipster, old Gen X. Ridiculous. Like, we're still edgy. Yeah, that's that. Those websites. Anyway, you know, they're preparing for a relaunch if that's something that tickles your fancy. Google and Canada have reached a deal to avert a news ban over the Online News Act. Canada. A former Google CEO, they say their company's AI guardrails aren't enough to prevent harm. I actually think I had a dream about AI last night. Yeah, for real. Like, I just remember having some kind of dream, and I was walking around in like a backroom style, like a database, like whatever, where all these servers were held. I swear to you, I did. But then I'm like, is that Minority Report? Or like, is it something that I saw? Like, I can't like place it. But they said the obvious, guardrails aren't enough to prevent harm. We're all gonna die either from an asteroid or AI. That's what's gonna happen. Walking faster may significantly slash the risk for type 2 diabetes. Or just like walking or exercise or something. And sadly, U.S. suicides reached a record high last year, according to the Wall Street Journal. We have a lot more, including the worst bar in the world, coming up. Looking for a proactive solution in a battle against COVID-19? Well, ivermectin is now available at All Family Pharmacy, based in Boca Raton, Florida. With a growing interest in its potential benefits, ivermectin has emerged at the forefront for its antiviral properties. Supported by robust research and real-world experiences, it has gained new attention as a possible possible ally in managing the impact of the virus. For reliable information and access to quality products like ivermectin, visit allfamilypharma.com/Dana and save 10% with promo code Dana10. Your health matters, so stay informed. Visit allfamilypharma.com/Dana. Navigate these challenging times with informed choices and proactive steps. All Family Pharmacy is U.S.-based and safe. Embrace the possibilities with ivermectin. Save 10% with code Dana10 when you place your order now at allfamilypharma.com/Dana. That's allfamilypharma.com/Dana, code Dana10. That's Dana and the number 10.
Looking for the drive-through version of The Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from The Dana Show.
I've said this, and I said this to Deng Xiaoping and the Himalayas, and I've said this to every world leader. It's never, never, never been a good bet to bet against the American people. Never, never, never.
Can I break this video down? Juan, you're going to hate me. I'm so sorry. Juan's like, yeah, I love when you do video breakdowns, Dana. These are great. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen coast to coast. Watch the simulcast. First off, let me just address what was said. And then Deng Xiaoping, dude. What? Who is he talking about? Does he mean Xi Jinping? Like the commie Chinese leader? Not a peep from anyone in the media on this, really. I just need a pulse check on these zombies that are running these publications. Not a single peep from you people. I don't care if it was your beloved grandfather that said something like this. You make fun of it. Because it should be, if you can't make fun of this, you're a soulless meat sack. You're a soulless meat sack and you're getting nothing for Christmas. That's it. How do you not? Dude, it's like 16 candles. It's like a movie scene. Okay, so I want to break this down because I got to give props to the female and the male that are standing on either side of him. And you could see it. The guy had a real good poker face. You could see there was a hint of question that passed over his face when the president said, Deng Xiaoping, which in the Himalayas, what? But the girl, the lady, you could tell she caught that and was like, what? And it registered, she caught herself, like they knew they were on the national stage and they were trying to keep it legit, right? So let's just walk through what is now my favorite video soundbite so far of this month. Go ahead.
I've said this, and I said this to Deng Xiaoping.
And then she looks right back at him like, I'm sorry, what? Deng Xiaoping, what did you just say? And you could see her pursed lips together. She just looked at him and went, what? The other guy, like his eyebrows were up real high. I love watching people's expressions on stuff. I can't tell you how many videos of this, these walkthroughs and stuff I've seen. So the guy's like, wait, what? And you could tell his eyebrows dropped just a little bit. And he's like, oh, here we go. But he expected this out of Biden. She didn't. And she just looks at him. The way her head jerked and looked at him right after he said that. That was something. But then it gets weirder. So after he says Deng Xiaoping and they're just standing there, then it's like, is he wearing a shock collar where if someone is standing behind the scenes and they're on the campaign and they like, oh, it needs more energy. My mom has candles and I'm not going to lie. I got some too for Christmas where you can do the remote with them. Those things are amazing, right? Mine are made in Taiwan. Thank you. Hers are China. And there's a remote and you can blink, 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 like with the remote. You know what I'm talking about. So it's like someone did that to him. Like they got a shock collar on him and they're back with the remote, like trying to get him to not be boring and sleepy. So go ahead because he gets him riled up and it's just out of nowhere and awkward.
Himalayas, I've said this to every world
She's
leader.
Dying still.
It's never, never.
To the mic. Now he leans over and the guy is like, what the hell's happening here? They're both amused. One thing that you can tell from both of their faces is that they are amused. She is suppressing a chortle, which is kind of like a choky laugh. She's suppressing it. And you can tell. And the guy is just looking like, yep. I mean, they are, the guy's like, has the expression of, this is my drunk friend. You know what I mean? Like, when you're at the bar and one of your friends who's maybe had a couple, you know, maybe a pint too many, starts making a joke and it's just awkward, not funny, but you find it funny. That's like him. She's just trying not to laugh. But okay, so again, weirder. Go ahead.
Never been a good bet to bet against American people. Never, never, never.
And okay, so she starts nodding her head, and the guy that's on the other side of him is like, I don't know what this thing means, but I guess it's Tilly time. We're going to throw down. And then he starts clapping like, yeah, fight. Yes. Love that. That's the only, who knows what the hell this guy's saying, but it sounds like he's talking about fights right now. And I'm down with that. And she just starts nodding her head. She turns into a bouncer like, mm-hmm, Tilly time. It's the funniest. This is so funny. I can't tell you how many times I watched this video. I watched it the first time and I literally LOL. Normally I'm lying when I write that. I'm not LOLing at all. I'm just like, I'm somewhat amused and my facial expression hasn't changed. I laughed like a loon out loud. I LOL'd loudly when I saw this video. I love the guy's expression. He's like, yeah, Tilly time. Yeah. And she's just starts nodding her head like, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, it's just precious. I'm sorry, go with me for simulcast, guys. Well, she's like, I'm not going to laugh. And he's like, yeah, what? Fight? Yes? Yes. And she nods her head and he's like, yeah, Tilly time. Anyway, you know what? Where's the bad lip reading people? Right. I want the bad lip reading people. You remember the one that we played where it was, they were dubbing Matt Gaetz and Kevin McCarthy in a fight? I brought the tiger. It was hysterical. They need to do that for this. Honestly, some days that's the only way I can take politics, and I work in this business.
It's almost like when Biden just speaks normally. It sounds like it's the lip reading thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? You make a really good point here, because they would only serve to make him look smarter and sound smarter, because at least they're
more coherent.
Yeah, they're like more coherent, more, you know, a little bit more consistent with their speech and stuff. I don't know. But that was, I'm still, yeah, I found that, I mean, that whole clip, I mean, you start with a Dong Xiaoping and you end with, and I'm going to do my angry old man pointing. Good night. So, I don't know. I'm speaking of the Bidens, by the way. Oh, I got some more Bidens. So, there was an unusual payment that was flagged to them. Are you shocked by that? You're not shocked. You're like, Dana, I know this. I know that. Yeah, but they keep finding more, guys. At some point, I mean, what is it going to take for the media to care about what they're finding with the Bidens? Look at this, sir. We found a pile of dead hookers and all kinds of crack rocks and all this cash. And it says Joe Biden's crack rock or Hunter Biden's crack rock on the crack baggie. And then it says Joe Biden's money from China. Written on all of the paper encasing the bills here. I mean, could this be Biden's? I mean, what does it take for them to actually pay attention to this? What does it take? So the newest story here is that the investigation into the money laundering, so there's the bank has an investigator, they had expressed serious concerns about a transfer of funds that had been done in the form of a $40,000 check from James Biden. Okay, I'm sidebar. I haven't had enough coffee today, number one. Number two, does James Biden sort of, who's the great value version of whom? Joe or James? They both look like weird morphed out versions of each other. And like we're missing somebody who looks normal. I don't know, anyway. So they said that a $40,000 check to James Biden, and it was an email obtained by House Oversight, Biden got a $40,000 personal check from his account. It was written by the wife. But how'd the wife get the money? That's what we're getting to. How did the wife get the money? And guess it was all with the Chinese energy firm CEFC. Hey, Kane, whose equity firm was doing all that business with CEFC?
Is that Rosemont Seneca?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah. Wait, remind everybody. Who is Rosemont Seneca owned by?
That would be Hunter Biden.
Oh, Hunter Biden. That's right. And whose baby infant son is he?
He's the baby infant
goo goo gaga baby. Who's that?
Of our president.
Our president, yeah. Joe okay. Biden. Yeah, just, you know. So they, the Chinese entity that sent all that cash to them, it was the CEFC. That's how they got it. CEFC. And it was all to the sister-in-law. And then all of a sudden they had all this money. And they're trying to be like, no, she wrote the check. But again, where did the money come from? It didn't just fall out of the sky. It didn't just apparate out of the ether. Where did it come from? And they flagged all of these. And this was just one of many transfers that they found incredibly suspicious. That's why they were flagged. I mean, that's why all of this, the banks were flagging them first. So they said, yeah, they were unusual. The original payment that was set up by Hunter Biden and a Chinese business associate was listed as being for management fees and reimbursements. But they had this guy, it was a payment to Hudson West III. Well, Hudson West III, okay, and he received these payments. And so they didn't really have any records of him, like, doing any consulting or management stuff. They had no record of him doing that at all. But then after it went to Hudson West III, they had nothing to merit any payment from anybody about management fees or reimbursements, is my point. What were the payments for? There was nothing to clarify what the payments were for. Once the $5 million landed at Hudson West, they carved it up into all of these different. I mean, they divvied it up, and then they started funneling it through all of their other different accounts. So if CEFC had hired somebody for management or consulting, say you own a business and you're hiring someone for management and consulting, wouldn't you just pay them, like, outright to them directly? It's kind of weird, right, that they would divide up everything that you're owed and then funnel it through a million different accounts first, right? Isn't that weird? Would you find that sketch?
Of course.
Huh. That seems shady. I don't know. How, and then it goes through all of these, this Rube Goldberg machine of Goldberg, and my Biden moment. It goes through this Rube Goldberg machine of financial shell game before it finally ends up in the Biden's account. Oh, it always ends up in the Biden's account. Make no mistake. I mean, I get that there's a reason why you have LLCs, but I don't understand the purpose other than to hide money or launder it. I don't understand the purpose of having a company just literally to move money around. Again, other than the obvious reason, aside from the obvious reason, why else do you have all these companies that just transfer assets? That's all they do. What does your business do? It just moves money. Like, literally, I just take it, receive it. No.
Launder.
It's really great. Just, you know, we got a lot of questions about this. So does House Oversight. All right, we have a lot more on the way coming up. I'm going to tell you about the worst bar. This bar, apparently it's based on the concept that people are tired of talking to other people. I get it. Then stay home, right? Yeah, we're gonna get into all of this. And we have Florida Man. We have Days of These United States. The latest at the Middle East. The latest happening in D.C. We're gonna make fun of people. We got all that stuff coming up. Our friends over at the Headrest Safe. This is like the Christmas gift to get, because I guarantee you got somebody on your Christmas list and they're really difficult to buy for, and it's kind of one of those people. Well, I guarantee you they don't have a headrest safe, and I guarantee you that they would be happy to have a headrest safe. The headrest safe is really innovative. It's the best vehicle safe that's out there. I mean, bar none. It got Concealed Carry Magazine's Editor's Choice Award for best-in-class vehicle safe. Now, yes, it's designed as a gun safe, which is basically like saying, yes, it's designed as like the toughest safe you can get for your car. It's easy to access. I mean, you can get to your stuff in 2.5 seconds. You got a magnetic access door, user-friendly biometric fingerprint reader, keypad, hard key, all that. But you can also use it, obviously, for things that are not guns, like medication or jewelry or other valuables. I mean, we're rolling into the holiday season. A lot of people drive to grandmother's house we go, And maybe you don't want to bring all your stuff in. If you're staying with family or if you're staying in a hotel, whatever it is, maybe you want to keep it in your headrest safe. Now, this thing is super, super easy to install. It locks securely in place with a deployable toggle bolt. I'm not allowed to use a drill in my house because of reasons. But I've installed this. And if I can do it, your child can do it. Your two-year-old can do this. And it's not going anywhere after you put it in your vehicle. And it's absolutely seamless because they have the material that they use. They can blend it in with your car's interior. They can match over 80% of the stuff that they put on your headrest. And again, the passenger side headrest, so it doesn't interfere with any kind of driver safety at all. Super useful, super smart, super affordable because they've lowered the price by $100 in time for the holidays. And with code Dana, you can save an additional $50 off. So get your headrest safe at theheadrestsafe.com. Use code Dana. Get an exclusive $50 off. That's theheadrestsafe.com. Code Dana. $50 off. 100% money back guarantee.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Instead of cutting them, or like Congressman Trump and Bob would want to do.
Does he think that Boebert's name is Trump and? He said Congressman.
Like Congressman Trump and Boebert want to do.
What? So he's a congressman.
No idea.
Hmm. Man, he had a bad day yesterday. Man, golly. All right, Fat. Good grief. Wasn't this after Deng Xiaoping?
Yes.
What he called Xi Jinping, mm-hmm. Chinese leader, Deng Xiaoping, because that makes sense. Yeah, he's super special, this guy, with his. I don't think that this in any way inspires confidence in any Democrat voter when they hear him. I think that's why they're very slowly, although they're up against the clock, if they're going to be pushing Gavin Newsom. I will be watching that thing with Newsom and DeSantis tonight because I think it's going to be very, very instructive in terms of Democrats' messaging. There are two factions right now in the Democrat Party. You have the faction that have pushed Biden, and you have the faction that I think there are a lot that like Newsom because they see him as the only other option they have going forward. The problem, though, with Democrats is they don't have anybody else. They really don't. Barack Obama, one of the worst things that he ever did, he screwed his own party hardcore in that he tried to protect his legacy and tried to fend off competitors by just destroying the bench. Do you remember in 2012... The guy that they had deliver the keynote at the DNC was one of the Castro brothers from Texas, right? And he was an all right speaker. He wasn't anything to be excited about. They were being groomed, like they were being eyed as potentially they could be. But they were identical twins. And one of the guys who was mayor, he switched out for his other identical twin brother so the other one could go to a fundraiser one time for a parade in San Antonio. That was a trip. They discovered that they were too goofy, essentially, to go any higher than they did. So they were discarded. But Barack Obama they didn't encourage a new crop of leaders. And so as of such, they totally depleted their bench. The only person sitting on it is Newsom, and he's sitting there twiddling his thumbs, just I and Joe Biden. This is going to be very interesting to see not only how both of these candidates do tonight, and he's a candidate, but also how the media responds to it, particularly Newsom. Stick with us, whole other hour on the way. Patriot Mobile wants to make your life easier. They want to bring you amazing cell phone service, number one. Number two, they want to save you money. Number three, they want to make sure that your money doesn't work against you. So they've been doing this for over a decade, the only Christian conservative wireless provider in America. So right now they have a Black Friday promotion. You can get a free smartphone with code Friday76. It's Friday76. Just think 1776, okay? Friday 76. Make the switch today. This is for a limited time only, though. This is a great company that works on behalf of you, works for you, serves you. And I'm proud to partner with them. I mean, it's just the best cell phone service that's out there. They have dependable coverage on all three major networks. You're getting the best service. When you switch, you're saving money. You're working with an entirely 100% U.S.-based team. So you're creating and maintaining U.S.-based jobs. And again, don't forget that Black Friday promotion, free smartphone with code Friday76. So make the switch today. Visit PatriotMobile.com/Dano or call 972-PATRIOT and use promo code Friday76. Get your free smartphone. Make the switch today. PatriotMobile.com/Dana. Call 972-PATRIOT, code Friday76 for details.
And your own popularity.
Sure.
You've seen the polls also. Your ratings, 38.5%, Biden's 40.4%, and Trump is higher. Ron Klain says this, and you've seen press about yourself over the years. He says that he believes that your popularity or unpopularity or whatever rating you want to put it as is a function of sexism and racism. He says that's part of the problem. He says she doesn't get the credit for all that she's done. Do you think that's true?
For what?
Well, are we talking about the media or people? As it relates to the media, I'm sure some of that is true.
For what? What does she do? I don't mean to sound like Shorzy here, but Jiminy Christmas. For what?
She brought us Venn diagrams.
Really? That's the VP that was yesterday at that New York Times butter my biscuit thing, whatever it was. What was it?
The Deal Book Summit?
Sure.
Okay.
Dana Lasher with you. On the airwaves. You can listen coast to coast. You can stream it. You can watch the simulcasts. Channel 347 DirecTV. So the reason that no one likes her is because they're sexist and racist, not because she totally sucks out loud. I mean, at her work, her jobs, the sexism into race. The sexism and racism. Wait a minute. Let me understand this. So you get into the vice president's office, but you can't. You get that far. But then all of a sudden, the sexisms and the racisms. So you get as far as actually getting into the VP office. Oh, but the reason that I'm not good at my job is because of to sexisms and to racisms is why. I mean, that's the truth of it. Unburdened by what has been, Venn diagram. She sounds like if you fed an AI machine, like just random boardroom stuff, and then told it to spit it out. Yeah, give me 1,000 words in a speech like you're a female vice president. And that would be it, right?
Yeah.
So you get as far as the VP office. So there's no sexism and racism stopping you then, right? You get in the, like, everyone's like, yeah, cool. All right. You know, she's in the VP office. But then all of a sudden it dawns on them that you're a woman of color. And then they're like, wait a minute, how did this happen? And then all the racisms and sexisms happen. Is that what you're telling me? Like, it goes that far to the VP office. Totally fine. No one says nothing. But only after she's in office. Because, see, I would think that if it was really sexism and racism at play, she would never have gotten into the VP office. She would have never been Vice President of the United States. So methinks that it has nothing to do with racism and sexism. She's just looking for some kind of justification to explain why she can't do her job well. That's what it seems like. I feel like I'm pretty correct on that. You know, I'm so tired of this. I'm so tired of, well, I'm a woman, so woman stuff, woman, lady, female. That's not a substitute for policy or wit or, you know, substance, nothing. Good heavens. Can I just tell you, because this, I just now saw this, it happened a couple hours ago. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says she's leaving X. She goes, quote, after Elon's F-bomb tirade, this will be my last post on X. She says, I can no longer support a platform run by a foul-mouthed degenerate.
Oh, no.
Huh. Didn't Rashida Tlaib say cursing shouldn't be a distraction? When she got mad, she was cursing about Trump. Mm-hmm. Hmm. I'm just saying. I mean, I remember not just her, but I remember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, too, using all of a sudden there are these new little neo-Puritans after his F-bomb tirade. I just said bye. Actually, and then I shared with her Rashida Tlaib, like saying that, you know, cursing's not a distraction. I think he said what he said in the way that he said it so that A, it would go viral. B, it was arresting to your attention. And C, it was just, you know, maybe it's not something you'd say in church. But I also don't think that, you know, we'd be talking about advertising Marxist boycotts like this in church either. The point is that he did it in order for it to have impact and it worked. And he's correct, by the way. All these companies that are like, we're going to pull on what grounds? Shorzy, for what? Because they want to accuse him of anti-Semitism for nothing. They're just trying to get him on something. That's all. They're trying to get him on something. What is she going to do? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has no influence outside of social media. Do you know how I know that? Because she doesn't move the needle. All these people that think all the stupid stuff they do on social media, it doesn't move the needle. Right or left, by the way. If it did, we wouldn't have an issue in 2020, guys. Nobody, I said something uncomfortable. It's true. It's true, though. Where's the lie? That's the whole, she doesn't move the needle. All she does is like flail about on social media and record herself. She's a younger version of Elizabeth Warren. Give her a few years and she'll be like, can I get you a beer? Asking her very uninterested spouse. I'm saying. But it's amazing to me. Can we talk also about this other very uncomfortable 2024 thing? What in the ever-loving hell is Trump doing? He didn't tweet. It was on his platform. He posted it. It's not made up. It's not Photoshop. About this. So some dude named Mark Fisher, I'm not playing the audio of this guy, some dude left BLM and said that he is, well, he said he left BLM. And he was talking about how, you know, he's going to vote Republican this time around. And then Trump had posted on his platform that he was happy to have he said, quote, spoke with Mark Fisher yesterday, a great guy, very honored to have his and BLM's support. I have done more for black people than any other president. Lincoln? Question mark. Including a 10-year blah, 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 criminal justice. The First Step Act is something that we can debate about later. But the key sentence is, very honored to have his and BLM's support. He could have just said his. He could have just said Fisher's support. Why? I don't care how much you love him. I don't care how much you hate him. Put it aside and let's all be reasonable people. We're not the left. Why are you saying that you want to have that you're honored to have BLM support? Did you see what they just posted a couple weeks ago? They were cheering on Hamas. BLM, which burned and looted for several years while we all had to be stuck inside our homes. And nobody did nothing. Even in D.C. BLM. I had a number of people telling me, which I think is interesting because I've written books about this and I've been, I don't know, writing it on air for quite a bit, talking about liberty evangelism, converting people. They're like, oh, Dana, you know, BLM can convert. Like, apparently, because I said, I go, so is this the new thing on the right? What's the script? Are we now in support of BLM? You know, and yes, I'm being a smartass because, hi, have you met me? Like, I love people who love it, love smartassery everywhere else, but then all of a sudden don't. Anyway, but I asked that. I'm like, why did he tweet that? Like, he could have just said Fisher support and that's fine. But BLM support. I mean, I don't think that Trump's dumb. I don't think that why would you put BLM support up there? Why? They looted, they burned, they destroyed neighborhoods. They impugn the character of half of the country for the way they voted. Everybody was a racist. They were pushing CRT and DEI in schools. They tried to burn a church down. I mean, good grief. Why would, and I get that people are like, well, you know, Dana, you know, we want to be able to convert people, you know. Okay, but without acknowledgement of wrong, how do you have reconciliation? I mean, biblically, it starts with acknowledgement of wrongs. I mean, unless you want to take issue with everything in the New Testament, happy to have that separate debate. But in order to have reconciliation, you have to acknowledge offenses. You have to acknowledge it. We're not going to be like the Bidens and pretend this stuff doesn't exist. I mean, they, for years, how long, Kane? How many years? 3 years? 4 years? Yeah. They burned and looted half the damn country. Every major city saw rioting. Rioting everywhere. Rioting in Dallas. Rioting in St. Louis. Rioting in Houston. Rioting in Austin. Rioting in Los Angeles. Rioting in Portland. Rioting in New York. Rioting everywhere there was rioting. Memphis. Nashville. Atlanta. Rioting everywhere. Chicago, rioting everywhere. Kansas City, rioting everywhere. There was rioting. D.C. And they, I mean, turned into by and large mansions. They ended up taking all this money that they were given, and they ended up using it to enrich themselves. I had some people say, well, you know, it's very important that we Republicans try to go after the black vote. Hold up. I don't know any. I literally do not know any of my acquaintance, my friends who happen to be black Americans who think that BLM was helpful. And they're not all on the right. They at worst thought, you know, it was either a distraction or a grift. Or just like a super far left faction. There are so many other ways to do outreach without sanctioning, mainstreaming, and welcoming a Marxist terror group that was celebrating, literally celebrating, October 7th. I don't know if you remember the image that they posted. They posted somebody on a paraglider holding up one of the BLM flags. And with, yeah. So there's no there hasn't been an acknowledgement of wrong here. And that's how reconciliation begins. And also forgiveness, too. This is the other thing. I wrote a whole book about this called Grays Canceled. Some of the people in my timeline should get it as Christmas gifts. But forgiveness doesn't mean acceptance. And again, acknowledgement of wrongs. You're not going to have reconciliation without it. You don't have big tent. I don't want to be in a big tent with a damn Marxist. I don't want to be in a big tent with a terrorist that tried to burn down a church. If people are that damn desperate for votes, then saddle up because y'all going to lose. If we're that bad, then we're going to have our asses handed to us in 2024. If it's so bad that we got to sit here and beg violent Marxists for votes, we don't need to do that. You don't have to debase yourself. That has nothing to do with outreach. It's not 5D chess. I had friends that had their buildings set on fire by riots in St. Louis. And you're telling, oh, well, you know, we got to forget. No. Oh, no. Absolutely not. Your right to self-defense was under attack by BLM because they thought they had the right to barge in on private property. And by God, if you tried to defend yourself, you're a racist. All of a sudden, we're going to sweep that under the rug? Really? No, we're not. I mean, the left can, but the actual right will not. Friends over at Wise Foods, Wise Food Storage. This is super. I mean, out of everything out there, this is like the only one where they're like, yes, everything is right here in the U.S. Freeze dried, dehydrated, easy to prepare. Just add water. You're getting top quality U.S. ingredients, U.S. food, and you're going to save some money as well. $50 on a 4-week survival food kit. Free shipping. All at preparewithdana.com. And again, 25-year shelf life, super easy to prepare, tons of different dishes, and you can save money. You're never going to have to worry about where your next meal is going to come from, not with Wise Food Storage. So order yours today at preparewithdana.com, and you can save $50 on your 4-week survival food kit, plus get free shipping, all at preparewithdana.com. That's preparewithdana.com.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So, the new CDC life expectancy data shows a painfully slow rebound from COVID. Or one might say a painfully slow rebound from all of the stuff that we had to live through under COVID, maybe. Americans are doom spending. This is interesting. Obviously, it's a problem. They say that nearly all Americans are concerned about the state of the economy. Many continue to spend more, save less. Doom spending, they say, maybe the one way to cope with stress is economic fears mount. But obviously, it comes at the expense of your own financial well-being. So it seems like a coping mechanism. 96% are worried about the economy. Inflation is still just destroying people. But holiday spending is going to reach record levels. You're looking at $966 billion. That's the projection. And they say it's like, you know, you have doom scrolling. Now you have doom spending. Credit card debt's topping $1 trillion. And you know who's really the most susceptible to doom spending? I get it. They're worried about buying houses. And the older generation did not help. But you can't be doom spending. And they say Gen Z and millennials are particularly susceptible to this. They said over 73% of Gen Zers would rather live in the moment. So that's about doom spending. So you can only blame the other generation so much, right? You can only blame like our parents so much for stuff. All right. Because I think that millennials are young boomers that had kids, right? Isn't that kind of the general thinking of it? Let's see. The dollar is heading for its worst month in a year. Oh, yay. Good heavens. This also, a couple of others. I don't like the there's other headlines that I have. I don't like these. They said that the kill switch coming to your car. We're going to be talking about EVs here coming up real quick because they're not selling. And now the kill switch, the mandate, which is a complete violation of privacy. It's true. And there are receipts and it's coming to your car. This is an actual thing that's happening. This is something we're going to talk about later on in the program coming up. We have more in store. We got meat. We got Dong Xiaoping. Lots. Stick with us.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
He'll get a public hearing after he does a deposition. He doesn't get to set the rules. Just because he told the DOJ, the IRS, the National Archives, and every other government agency that's been investigating the Biden for years to stand down doesn't mean he's going to tell the House Oversight Committee what to do. We have sent him a lawful subpoena.
So that's James Comer, who's saying that this is... talking about this whole thing with Hunter Biden, that he's not going to tell House Oversight what to do, what he doesn't get to do. It's just such obvious audio. I really don't give a rat's ass about coming in with it. It's just obvious. We get it. Burp, burp, burp. Meat and potatoes. Saying something that we all know. I need more coffee. My coffee machine broke. I hate the earth. Smodge needs to come and just blight this rock. Welcome. Yeah, welcome back. Bottom of the second hour. Oh, this is what happens when I don't have enough coffee, guys. That's what I have my Black Rifle coffee beans. But my coffee machine broke. Can I just get, you're going to indulge me for a second because it's like a vehicle operating without oil, right? I sometimes, you know, I'll have like, I had a little bitty mini cup of coffee because we have this Breville machine that Breville's garbage. It's garbage. I said it. I don't care if anybody, we've had three machines. We keep having to take them back because literally like clockwork, every year and a half, they totally break down. So we had this, you know, got it for Chris's birthday, had this fancy coffee machine because we drink a lot of coffee and it keeps breaking down. So now we're without coffee. But Dana, couldn't you do like an old timey, some of you out there dying at me right now. Like, you know, the drip machine, like your parents had, asks Kane every day. And I'm like, no, because I just don't like the way it tastes. I want it to wake me up when I smell it from across the room. You know what I mean? I want it to have the effect of Hunter's crack. But without the crack. Does that make sense?
Almost.
Yeah. So I have my favorite mug ever. And there's but one drop left in it. And I'm on my deathbed right now. I don't know if you can tell. This is me on my deathbed, not having enough coffee. So that's where I'm on the struggle bus right now, guys. Hate the world. You guys are the same way. I see you guys all talking. I see you guys all talking on social media and in Facebook comments. I'll post something in the morning and you're like, oh, I've only had X amount of coffee today. Oh, I can't process this that early. I see you. I see the comments of the newsletter prep I send out in the morning. Y'all like, oh, I haven't had enough coffee yet. Don't judge me. All right. So I wanted to touch on, let me get my audio list up for radio here. I wanted to touch on what were you telling me? Because you were playing me slap fighting, but I couldn't just roll into it. We had to set it up for the folks because they're slap fighting really badly in the Senate right now.
Yeah, well, it's been going on.
It's like a girl fight in the bathroom at junior high.
So I have this 3-minute audio that kind of,
yeah,
this is the judiciary committee, uh-huh, here. This is what started the problems that we're now seeing
and they're having it. It's about big tech. It's about big tech, because big tech, as you know, like for instance, how YouTube has been taking down our videos and moving to demonetize certain things while at the same time demanding that you participate in their program where they throw ads in the middle of your live broadcast. But okay. It's not just YouTube, but it's other big tech companies. Our government not only has been pressuring them to censor conservatives, but in some instances paying them to do it. And so this is this fight that they're having in the Senate is all related to this. Listen. I thought we had it. No, we don't have it.
I didn't know if you were setting up the Schellenberger stuff or if you're.
Yeah, so Schellenberger's there. You have the two guys who did the Twitter files there. And they,
Taibbi
and Schellenberger, who sounds, by the way, just like John Malkovich.
He does, actually.
He sounds, his vocal tonality is like totally John Malkovich. Anyway, sorry.
So I'll play some Schellenberger, and the judiciary stuff is completely different. It's about confirmation of.
Right. Yeah. But the Twitter, this was interesting with the Twitter.
This is what I'm going to play now. Listen.
13% censorship, still censorship?
Absolutely.
And the other 87% is what we call the chilling effect that the courts have long recognized that they engaged in. That is the problem.
There's a broad op. By the way, part of the operation, Congressman
Holy
Goldman,
cow.
Part of the operation was to change the terms of service. So you see them constantly trying to change the terms of service. You see them. It was 35% of the URLs that were, this according to EIP, were labeled, removed, or soft blocked. That's all forms of censorship. That censorship is not just removal.
General Lady, but 65% were not. So how can the government be so coercive?
So does the First Amendment say that the government
for the course on government efficiency?
Does the First Amendment say the government can censor?
The time of the gentleman has
expired. They're not censoring. They're flagging in the social media companies.
So under coercion,
35% of a First Amendment?
It's not the First Amendment. It's the terms of service, as you said, and they are flagging it for the social media companies to make their own decisions. That is not the First Amendment. That is the terms of service.
We have just seen
them. Congressman, you're an attorney. You know that the four federal judges have already ruled that.
And I know that it's on appeal in front of the Supreme Court right now.
Okay. What is that laugh?
Whoa, that was fun. I think that got to the heart of the issue.
That was hysterical. That's pretty funny. Yeah, when they have to sit here and I have been so deboosted. Let me just explain to you my social media hell. And the stuff that you have to do. And how this is affected. You know, just from my perspective, you know, just to, it because that's all I can. I see what happens in the headlines, but all I can offer at some point is what I've lived. Because it hasn't just been with COVID. And I've been talking about this since before COVID happened. I'm glad that everybody else woke up to it and saw what was happening, because this has been going on for a long time. Even when some of these people who are uncovering some of the Twitter files now were on the left and had no problem with it then. That's the kind of thing that I'm going to be honest. It does kind of piss me off, because there are people who think that history began the day that they were born. Some of us have been out here since we were in our early 20s, and we've been kicked around and we have been deboosted and demonetized. When I really started going really hard into Second Amendment advocacy, which I've always been a Second Amendment proponent. When I started going really hard into Second Amendment advocacy, I was hit so hard on social media, it crushed me. I have screenshots on Twitter before Musk bought it, where for 3 months, I did not gain or lose a single follower. For months, I had static views. All the views on all my stuff were zero, which, you know, that's not even possible, but the my account was so slammed that, I mean, sometimes it was like screaming into the ether. There would be zero. It was like I didn't exist. They just kept it so hardcore suppressed. On YouTube, it's so bad. Juan's job. So Juan works with the First. We have our radio show and we have our simulcast. Juan has to fight every single day. He's like, the stuff that they've done to this account is insane. He wasn't even there when they started this. He just walked into it and he wasn't even fully informed of how much we were deboosted. And then he started seeing it himself. And he's like, this is crazy. We had a friend who, after Musk bought Twitter, knew some of the new people that they brought onto Twitter. And they were like, there are so many layers on this account, yours and others, and that it's going to take forever to go through. They're taking forever to go through all this code. Facebook, it's the same thing. YouTube, we got hit really bad. They hit us so bad on YouTube. It has affected me professionally. It has affected me financially. We found difficulty in expanding and doing what we need to do because of the deboosting and the censorship from big tech and government. And I've been hit with this. I mean, my gosh, we actually worked with a company to help fight back against some of the stuff that YouTube was doing to us and doing to the account. And it got even worse. It got really bad because of my Second Amendment advocacy. There were times on Twitter where they would literally just take me out. You couldn't even find any, I was on air, if you went on Twitter and you tried to search for any of my tweets, current, past, whatever, when I was on air, you couldn't find me. There were people who would take video of their screens trying to do that, and they would send it to us or post it, and you could not even find me. Anything where I would talk about firearms or anything like that was immediately hidden. On YouTube, anytime that I mentioned, and it's not really gotten any better, on any time that I mentioned any kind of guns or firearms, anything like that, oh my gosh, they made me invisible. It has affected me professionally to the point where it stunted anything that we were doing digitally. It put a pause on all digital expansion. It put a pause on branching out and even hiring other people to work with. It rocked us. And then when COVID hit, it got even worse. Because we would talk about government-forced mandated vaccines and we would talk about actual science and it got even worse. If you could believe that it got worse, which is kind of hard to imagine if you've seen, and as Juan, it got even worse. And so then they really started pulling videos and issuing us penalties and threatening us and doing all of this stuff. And so these hearings have been a long time coming, but I really want to know where the hell all of these big free speech purists were when some of us in the conservative sphere were saying, hey, this is weird. Don't you find this weird? Not a single one of them were, not any of them. None of them were concerned with it until they had skin in the game. And I just kind of find that to be lame. You're only situationally interested in natural rights if it concerns you. And this has been going on a long time. And then you find out, I mean, you knew it, but you really find out that your government's been involved in it. And I see this and it does make me angry. You know? It makes me angry because I don't think that the regular audience, you guys don't see the weeds of what we do. You're not in the weeds of what we do. You don't see the back end of what we do. You see what we do on camera and behind the mic, but the frustration sometimes that we come up against back channel because everything's expanding digitally and you just get your ass beat by big tech and big government that's using big tech as a censorship agent. And that's what it is. They're using these companies as agents of censorship. That's what makes it censorship, because it's driven and directed by the government. And we're still fighting it today. Are we not, Juan? Still fighting it today. Kane, you've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, there be times I've literally had, like, stuff on YouTube. I've had users removed on YouTube. We've had videos that before that it's like they're invisible. No one, not even a single, it's crazy. And there's no, and as Juan tried to explain to me one time, he was like, well, this doesn't make sense because this metric says this and this metric says this, which should make this metric say this, and it doesn't. And that's suspicious. But that's what, you know, a lot of us have been dealing with from the get-go. Some of us even more than others. So it's been a struggle. And I get the passion of people. I'm glad that more people have woken up to it. Really could have used that, you know, 7, 8 years ago, 6 years ago, 5 years ago. Really could have used that energy then. Because it's hard to come back. It's hard to like gain ground. Even when they, like on Twitter, when they start opening this spigot, and I can tell some things have changed on Twitter, it's still hard to come back. And when you work in this industry and you deal in information and all of a sudden you just disappear, it's tough. And I'm not, you know, I don't have Diane Sawyer money. I don't got Barbara Walters money. I don't got Hannity money. I don't got things like that. I can't hire a whole team of people to fight all of this every single day for me. So you got a lot of these people who, you know, have a much more humble origin. And they're coming up and they're trying to expand digitally. And it's very, very difficult because of all of these roadblocks that have been measurably and documented put in place by these companies. All at the request of government, as we're finding out. Because if you think, you got to think, if they were doing it with COVID, you know they were doing it with guns. If they were doing it with ivermectin, you know they were doing it with firearm law. I mean, they were doing it to parents at school board meetings. Where have they not abused their authority? So we live in the greatest era of information, but you know what? The government has managed finally to figure out how to use the greatest tools of distributing information. And now it's, well, who controls the distribution? If they can bring all the big tech companies in and they can play on everyone's political zealotry, then they can control what you see. And then it goes back to how it was before. And that was their whole goal. I don't know if it changes. I don't know. It's like Elon Musk is fighting a one-man war. And there are a lot of powers to be that are lining up against him. I haven't always agreed with him on everything. And I do think that he's part genuinely interested in it, and part he's super rebellious, and that works in our favor because everybody else is everybody that thinks similarly is too. But it's a hard war to wage, even for the richest man on earth.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
I mean, who among us, right? Like, a Florida man was arrested because he got caught with a gator in his SUV. This comes out of Dixie County, Florida. A man's facing charges after he was caught by Florida deputies transporting an alligator in his SUV. According to Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, a Dixie County deputy discovered a 3-foot gator in the man's SUV during a traffic stop on November 9th. It's all just coming out now, though. Apparently, the man told the officials that he saw the gator crossing the road, was terrified it was going to get hit by a car. He was like, I'm going to release the gator into a pond. He's facing charges of unlawful possession. They said the gator was released in a safe area. Was he, though, going to release it in a pond? Because I feel like if he was, then you should have just let him do his thing, right? He helped the taxpayer. Come on. I don't know. Let's see. We had the lady about eating counterfeit cash the other day. A man was arrested for stabbing a lady in a Walgreens parking lot because, according to deputies, he said he wanted to. Yeah, I mean, they go, why? And he goes, because I wanted to. That's literally what it says in the affidavit. Kenneth Bryan, 34, was charged with aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, second-degree felony after the incident. It was in Walgreens in Naples in Florida. Yeah, he looks totally dopey in his mugshot. Stick with us, third hour.
You mentioned before that U.S. believes there are 2 American women held. One has been released. So does that mean there is 1 American woman left being held? And what do we know about her conditions? Do we think she could be released soon?
I wish I had good answers for those questions. Unfortunately, we don't know. We do believe that there's of the unaccounted for Americans, that we believe there's one other woman that's unaccounted for, and that we had believed was taken hostage. So we were hoping to see two women and, of course, little Abigail come out over the last week.
Yeah, and they're finding out that their way isn't really working. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you, top of this third hour. You can listen coast to coast. You can stream the radio program as well everywhere. YouTube, Facebook, YouTube, which we hate. But they have good chat there. In Channel 347, DirecTV as well. Yeah, they've also, yesterday we talked about how they were pushing this idea of a two-state solution, which is never going to work because Hamas doesn't believe in a two-state solution. I mean, in order to have a two-state solution, you have to believe that Israel has the right to exist, which they don't. And that's the problem. It's this this belief in magic, apparently, that they're going to have this peaceful kittens and sunshine world where everything is resolved with a two-state solution. You could have any of these other countries take in, you know, these people that live in Gaza. But this is about control. It's about Hamas and terror groups trying to tell people they want to control this part of the world. And they'll fabricate this, you know, fantastical story, a fairy tale of a country that's never existed and has never been supported in terms of existing throughout all of antiquity. They just conjure up out of the ether an ethnicity that's never existed until they needed something to conveniently dovetail in with this fictional country that they've created. All of these people, most of them, I think, they've had some Egyptians, some Saudis, some Jordanians. This is about a terror group that just wants to make up an excuse to control this part of the world. That's it. That's all there is to it. They're colonizers. They're colonizers, and that's the truth of the colonizer. They're the occupation. If you want to have a discussion on who is or who isn't the occupation, they are the occupation. And the elected government that they chose for themselves doesn't believe in any their neighbor to the north's right to exist. So you're not going to have a peaceful solution there. Their elected government's got to go. That's it. Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden, though, they're realizing how tough this is. Schumer only just began, yesterday, talking about anti-Semitism within the Democrat Party? Mm-hmm. Just yesterday. And Biden, I think, has started to stay away from it. Have you noticed this? He's been pushing Bidenomics in that disastrous speech that he gave yesterday. It was so bad. He started talking about Bidenomics. Did you know, I was looking at this comes from Worldometers, a couple of places. The median age of a resident in Gaza Strip is 19.
The median?
Mm-hmm. Wow. The median age is 19. The hatred of Jewish people is actually a part of their curriculum. I don't know if you realize this. When they took over after Israel left, unilaterally pulled out in 2005, and then they had elections in 2006, and people said, we want Hamas, and they elected Hamas, that was one of the things that they implemented was you're teaching hatred of Jewish people. You're not teaching criticism or teaching government and this is good government or bad government. It had nothing to do with that. No, they literally went out. I mean, it's like Mein Kampf part two. And you're shocked that after almost 20 years of this type of education, people are shocked that Hamas's popularity would soar to the point where the authority had to suspend elections because they got so popular. And again, median age is 19. Their popularity swelled up to outside of Gaza and even threatened the authority in the West Bank. And you're shocked. So you can't say that they don't represent the people that elected them, the people that they conditioned with in schools, and the people that wanted to overwhelmingly vote for them in both territories to the point where elections had to be suspended. I mean, that's crazy. There was a point that had been made. Who was it? Dwayne Patterson was looking at popularity of like, for instance, in Democrat Party and Republican Party, etc. And the survey, there was a Jerusalem Post piece that showed they surveyed people in Gaza and West Bank since the October 7th attacks. 75% support the attacks. 74.7% agree in the creation of a quote unquote Palestinian state from the river to the sea, meaning no existence for Jewish people. 75%. And Patterson noted that Trump's best poll in the current primary right now, and that's an inflated margin, but it's still he's still in the lead, 64%. There's more dissent in the GOP than Gazans and West Bank residents against Hamas. Yet, as Patterson notes, they want to tell you, oh, the Republican Party's been totally taken over. That's what the left says. But the left won't say that Hamas is totally taken over. Or that support for terror has totally taken over. Don't you think that's an interesting factor? So if you have 75% of those surveyed that support Hamas after the attacks, how do you say that Hamas, which again was elected by the same 75% of people that supported them, and their popularity has only grown, how do you say that they don't represent them? That Hamas doesn't represent them? I mean, based on what is your argument against that? You have, and that's just one of many surveys that have been taken over the past 10 years. These are just surveys taken just right after October 7th. Now, do you understand why none of the other Arab nations want people from these two territories to come into their countries? Do you understand why nobody's taking anyone who might be displaced by their elected government's warmongering, Hamas's warmongering? Do you understand why maybe perhaps Jordan or Egypt or the Saudis or anybody else, they won't take any of these people? Because they actually, a lot of them are signers of the Abraham Accords. They're not gonna take in people who, when they have been accepted elsewhere, like in Lebanon, have you seen what's happened previously in the countries where displaced people from these two territories, what has happened? They bring that ideology with them. They saw an increase in terror attacks, increase in conflict, increase in turmoil, fighting, etc. It got very, very bad. And so they said, no, we're not going to accept any more people coming in. We're not doing this anymore. There's a reason why. The left here are too stupid to see it. They're too stupid to acknowledge it. They keep saying, well, you can't talk about a group of people. It's just, this is Hamas. So again, I go back. You have all these surveys, and the popularity has only grown. And these aren't magical made-up surveys either. It was so bad. You have the quote-unquote Palestinian Authority that oversees, under that umbrella, you have Hamas and Fatah. Fatah used to have power in Gaza, and they were displaced electorally, in an election by Hamas. And they are still, the guy who runs Fatah is the chair of the authority, and they run West Bank. They're all the same people. That's what I've been saying day after day. But you might think that some people might say, oh, these surveys, I don't know how I put much stock into them. Well, do you put stock in the authorities suspending elections because they were so nervous at Hamas winning elections in West Bank and controlling both territories that they suspended those elections because Hamas's popularity was so overwhelming? Because that's what happened. So you can't say that these surveys are bunk. They're actually incredibly reflective of what's happening there. If they had another election in Gaza, even after everything, Hamas would probably, according to all this, still be elected. They're still super popular in West Bank. So now you see this. Now you see what the truth of this matter is. I don't know why it's so difficult for people to talk about this. Everything is, it's like they got a focus group everything. These politicians are so weak and they're so terrified. It's just stupid to say that they don't represent them. It's stupid. Now, tonight, and we're going to talk to Jen Van Laar about this. She's the managing editor over at Red State. So tonight you have DeSantis versus Newsom. I actually think this is incredibly smart to do. I think this is a very smart debate to have. I think DeSantis is wise for doing it. Because there's, and here's why. The left, a huge faction of the left is going to be paying attention because it's Newsom, and a huge faction of the left wants, I'm like literally hit my microphone. Hair was like, I was about ready to sneeze. It was like getting close. It's crazy today. My whole point before I distracted myself, because I talk with my hands like crazy. My whole point is that there is a sizable enough faction on the left where they are, they're excited about Newsom. They think that Newsom, they would love for Newsom to replace Biden. That's not, you know, a big secret on the left. And they're going to be watching it. They're going to be cheering on their guy. And they think that his way is the way forward. I mean, you have California versus Florida, the governance of Florida versus the governance of California. And I think this is the choice that Americans are having to make going forward in 2024. You have two choices. Which one are you? This is it. This is the last exit off the road to California. You're not going to be able to claw back to anything that remotely resembles what the country looked like 20 years ago, 30 years ago, after 2024. It's not going to happen. I mean, it would take, I don't think that you have the will to maintain that generation after generation, especially right now. I mean, not with a populace that gets upset over people on pancake syrup. You know, I just don't see it happening. It's going to be a very interesting contrast. And I'm interested to see how DeSantis performs against somebody like Newsom. Because Newsom, DeSantis is very much, I'm going to buckle down and we're going to get it done. And I'm going to tell you all about it after. He's more of a Calvin Coolidge than he is like a showman. Newsom is Newsom. I mean, he's a pretty boy, if you want to say that. He's a frou-frou California dude who comes from old money. He is generationally Democrat. He's a Nepo baby. It's going to be very interesting to see the contrast between these two. And Jen Van Laar is saying, look, Republicans need to realize there is an actual threat on the horizon here. And we're going to talk to her about that. She's a lifelong Californian. She knows all about this business here with Newsom and Democrats in the state.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So I'm reading about, here's the scaremongering headline. So just, you're probably going to start hearing a lot about this if you haven't already. They're saying, oh, it's China's white lung. It's hitting the U.S. It's the newest thing, guys, the newest craze. They said mystery wave of pneumonia has hit America. Ohio County records 146 child cases of white lung syndrome, which it says meet the definition of an outbreak. Infection overwhelms Chinese hospitals. This case is spike in Europe. Oh, my gosh. Weeping and gnashing of the teeth. This is crazy. And they're saying that, oh, it's raising fears of another outbreak. It's an outbreak. Oh. They say this every time. We're not going to be fooled again. Like the WHO said, we're not going to be fooled again. Just saying. They're immediately going into the fear mongering. And of course it comes out of China. Of course it does. An 83-year-old woman dies after falling through the floor of her home into a well shaft. Now this is a new thing. Yeah, so the 83-year-old woman fell 48 feet down a well shaft that was under a 100-plus-year-old home. The woman, she was arrived at the house to assist her daughter move. And as she was walking in the kitchen, she stepped onto a weakened floor and fell through it right into a well shaft that the family had no clue about. It is wild. It's like a horror film. Isn't there a horror film where there's like, I swear I've seen something like that. Yeah, no, well, no, I mean like where there's like all these tunnels and mines and... Sounds like a Hamas house. A teen who learned CPR at school saved a toddler from drowning on Thanksgiving. A California teenager did the right thing. This is so good. This is a great story. She performed CPR on her 3-year-old relative who almost drowned in the family's pool on Thanksgiving. CPR is always a good skill to have, the ability to do that. And let's see. This is an Amarillo. Who has this much time on their hands? A Grinch tries to steal Christmas. Now look, yes, we all know Jesus is real and that Christ is king, but you don't have to stand outside of a kid's school with a sign that says Santa is fake, Jesus is real. Come on. Seriously, that was a look. Cain just...
Because then I'd feel like Jesus was telling me to do stuff at that point.
Yeah, and he stood outside in a Grinch costume. Well, dressed as the Grinch, dressed as Santa. Yeah. And they police were called, but they didn't arrest him. They said he was on the lawfully on the sidewalk. Clearly parents would not be happy about that. Jennifer Van Laar, did Dems change their bylaws? Stay with us.
Whether you're a policy wonk, a news junkie, or simply someone hungry for insightful discourse, the Dana Show podcast has your back. Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. You can listen coast to coast in a market near you. You can also stream the radio program, and you can watch the simulcast, Channel 347, DirecTV, YouTube, Facebook as well. Dana Lash here with you at the bottom of this third hour. All right, so tonight, one of the things we were pre-gaming a little bit is this like one-off debate between Ron DeSantis, Florida governor, and Gavin Newsom, Gruesome Newsom, California governor. It's weird because they're both technically, one's officially second in the primary. The other one's not official, but is unofficially second in the primary. But it is a really good contrast of the choices that Americans have going into 2024. California and Florida, I mean, two states that are talked about so much as representing the left and the right. But there's more to it than this. I think it's a smart choice for DeSantis to do it. But I think that there is a line that you got to be aware of also. Because as we were kind of talking about, Democrats don't really have a bench, I think, save for one guy. And that's Gavin Newsom. And he's really been rising in, you know, name recognition nationally the past couple of years for good and bad reasons. And then there was something interesting that I saw from Jennifer Van Laar, who is the managing editor at Red State. And she had a very intriguing piece, and she was tweeting about this. I didn't realize that Democrats had really changed their bylaws regarding the replacement on the presidential ticket. That's kind of interesting. So throw that in the mix, and this takes a whole new appearance, doesn't it? Jennifer joins us now via Skype. You can find her at redstate.com and on X. I almost said Twitter, on X. Jennifer, thanks so much for joining me. You are really insightful in this because you're a California resident, California native. You've been there following politics. You know, I think, more in the conservative sphere about Gavin Newsom and his history, I think, than anybody else in commentary. You caught this, that Democrats changed their bylaws. And he's a very ambitious person. He's making all the right moves. What does that tell you? What do you see going into this?
Well, there's a couple of possibilities, especially as we see Joe Biden's poll numbers continue to tank and the Democrats are going to get desperate. You know, we all know that they want to keep Kamala on the ticket because they don't want to upset the black people, the black women especially, and they don't want to lose the White House even more. So there's going to be some difficult conversations, I foresee, and whether it comes as a contested convention or whether it comes as replacing Joe Biden due to, quote, disability after the convention, I believe that Gavin will be on the ticket.
Ooh, and this is like especially a thought that's like really been growing. And then the Democrats changing their bylaws there. I didn't really see a lot about this. This kind of seemed like it slipped under the radar.
Well, they don't want to signal their plans too much because yeah, you know, they want to have that element of surprise. But they have in their bylaws where, I'm going to read it, in the event of death, resignation, or disability of a nominee of the party for president or vice president after the adjournment of the national convention, and here's how they go about it. The national chairperson of the DNC shall confer with the Democratic leadership of Congress, the Democratic Governors Association, and then report back to the committee on who they want to fill that. So we know how the Democrats operate, and we know that they, even if it didn't have wording like that, they could still twist it to make whatever regulations say that. And that seems like a pretty easy way to get Biden off the ticket if he has more of these episodes and then they just stop ignoring them and actually calling them what they are.
Yeah, that's a really good point. We're talking with Jennifer Van Laar, who is the managing editor over at Red State. She's been following all this stuff with Gavin Newsom. And you've been warning Republicans, too, saying, look, you're playing with fire. You cannot get too comfortable with this guy. I agree with you. I don't think that because we kind of see, because we're, I mean, obviously we're conservative and we look at this, especially those of us not in California, we're like, gosh, how could he be an attractive candidate to anybody? But he's coming, he's old money. He comes from very powerful families in California. They've forgiven him a lot. I mean, this was the guy who was dining at French Laundry when everybody else had to stay home. And then you, we're going to talk a little bit too about some of the baggage in his personal life, but they, I mean, it doesn't seem to ding him. And so talk to us a little bit about this. I mean, are Republicans aware of what they're inviting?
No, I don't think they're aware. And part of it is because Republicans across the country have this mindset of California is just weird. Let it fall into the ocean. Ignore it. They're stupid. They voted for this. And part of the reason that he keeps getting in is because the media doesn't challenge him here at all. And they bury his stories for him. And so that you have that to deal with. And then when conservatives don't pay attention, I had a bunch of stories back in the spring where Gavin Newsom let people die in the mountains. They were snowed in for 2 weeks and it was a Republican area. I was trying to make this into Gavin, his Cancun moment, like he used to pick on Ted Cruz about. The conservatives just said, eh, whatever. And I'm going, you've got to help me amplify this because otherwise you're going to end up with this guy in the White House.
And now here we are. And because he has so much baggage. I mean, that, I mean, just the mistakes that he made with the high speed rail stuff and the boondoggle with that. I mean, that would tank anybody else coming from any other state. But there's a whole apparatus there to aid this guy, to help him. Because really, who else do Democrats have besides him?
We know it's not Kamala. I mean, she's failed on a big scale. Pete Buttigieg. I mean, come on. They don't really have anyone.
No, they don't have anyone. We're talking with Jennifer Van Laar, and you can find her at Jen Van Laar on X. So the changing the bylaws, he does seem like he's running a shadow campaign of sorts. He was very, and I get as governor of California, when he welcomed Chow Dong Ping, or however Joe Biden said his name at his speech the other day, when he welcomed Xi Jinping to the state of California, I get it as governor, you know, he's there. But he wasn't just there with Biden. Like, he welcomed him by himself with his wife. And it was a very big deal. He was more front and center than any other governor that I've ever seen that's welcomed a foreign leader in their state before. That and his, you know, visits to Florida and his trips and media stunts elsewhere. I mean, it seems like he's really running a shadow campaign and that the Biden team is kind of aware of it. But I mean, what gives here? It's so weird.
It is weird. And not just him welcoming Xi Jinping, going to China and having one-on-one talks with him and negotiating climate accords between California and China. I don't even think that that's really legal or it's something that he should be doing. He's not an official representative of the United States government. Why is he over there doing that? And Biden just looked the other way because the Dems know Biden is not in any way capable of having those kind of trips and talks with people. So I think that all of it is really done on a calculating basis to get the public to see Gavin Newsom as a statesman.
Ooh, that is a really good, that is a really good strategy that they're doing. And it makes him, I mean, because he can form a sentence, it, immediately he comes off as looking better than Biden. And if he doesn't have name recognition, doesn't that kind of work in favor of him if people don't know all about him elsewhere? Because then they don't know all of, you know, like you were talking about, him letting people die on the mountain, his, you know, the crime rate, the money spent on a rail system that never happened and really should have never been proposed. But, I mean, they don't know about all of his offenses.
Right. They don't know that 15 years ago in San Francisco, he said that he would have homelessness solved in 10 years. So he's obviously failed at that.
Yeah.
They don't know that he's the one that brought George Gascon into San Francisco, that he and George Gascon authored Prop 47 together, which is widely credited with making our crime rate skyrocket here and letting people out of prison. They don't know any of that. And a lot of it's been wiped from the internet, but I'm working hard to find all of it.
And you're doing a really good job at it, too. Speaking of which, this rolls perfectly into finding this. I was reading this part the other day. This blew my mind. So we talked about the whole Harvey Weinstein, Rose McGowan thing when it happened. And we talked about Jennifer Newsom at the time. So this is Gavin Newsom's wife. I thought Hillary Clinton had an unlikability factor. I feel like his wife is really trying to challenge that. Like Hillary may have met her match in someone who is more unlikable than her, if that is a possible thing that can happen. So she apparently was trying to pressure, according to your reporting, and from what you got, the everything that's out there, you even got like the conversations they had, the messages, the fact that Jennifer Newsom was telling trying to get Rose McGowan to kind of back off some of these claims because of her relationship to the law firm that was representing Harvey Weinstein. And then when she didn't, she had this whole safety net of, well, I also was targeted by Harvey Weinstein. And then that became a huge story that obscured the fact that she was trying to basically bully Rose McGowan out of telling the truth about Harvey Weinstein. And there's even more to it than that.
Oh, right. And it's funny because, you know, Rose McGowan, to go to her and say, well, what can the law firm do to make you happy, aka shut up? Like, that's not the person that I'm going to go to with that kind of thing. Right. It's not going to work. But it has worked for Jennifer Newsom in the past, which is why she went that way. Because back when Gavin was mayor, he had an affair with his appointment secretary, so an employee, who was also his best friend's wife. And the best friend was also Gavin's campaign manager. Oh, and so that comes out. The woman didn't go to the press. She told her husband, admitted the affair. And then the husband went to Gavin and called him on it and quit. So this all comes out, and Jennifer Newsom goes to the San Francisco Chronicle and says, well, you know, she was really the culprit. Then when people hit back on that, she goes and writes an 802-word comment on a blog post.
I love how you said it was like E.E. Cummings style. She was just full of passion.
And she says, it was just times that she showed up passed out on his doorstep, like insinuating some kind of date rape or that he was having sex with a passed out drunk woman, which is a whole other kind of terrible thing for him.
Wow. And nobody's talked about this. Nobody.
Thing is still up. I found it online. It's not like I'm just saying this occurred and I have no proof. There's screenshots.
And anybody else, it sounds weird to say this, anybody else, their political ambitions would have been immediately clipped, but not Gavin Newsom. Not even with all of this baggage. I don't even know how this would play out as he becomes more known on a national stage, which is what we might be seeing tonight. I wanted to talk to you about this as well, because I think in some respects, I feel like DeSantis is trying to get ahead of it. And he wants to pick a fight with Newsom just to kind of, you know, maybe get some shots in, body shots in on this guy. But I don't think that he's ever debated anybody like Newsom. Now, for all the ways that we can make fun of Newsom and how much hair product he uses and his insane wife and everything else, there is also another reason why he's been in politics. So, like, he can be amiable when he wants to be, and that can come across well to voters without them realizing his backstory.
Right. You even have seen in the times that Sean Hannity has interviewed him, and Hannity came right out and said, there's an LA Times story where Hannity says, yeah, we had an immediate connection. We hit it off. And so if you're not kind of hip to that kind of how narcissists work thing, then you're liable to fall for it. But the thing that DeSantis hopefully knows is, and by watching some of Newsom's interviews with reporters, he gets upset very easily. And he has a glass jaw, basically. If you know where to hit, Newsom will just completely lose his cool, and he could have a viral moment of just looking like a madman, which is, I think, if I'm Ron DeSantis, that's what I'm going for.
That's a really good point. And apparently Newsom, I saw this today, I think it was Twitchy that had, I think Twitchy had it, and I think you talked about it too, how he's, apparently Newsom is using Nikki Fried to help prepare for the debate tonight. So he's gone to all the baddies in Florida Democrat politics to have, to help him prepare for tonight.
Well, I mean, Nikki's not had such a stellar track record. So, you know, good luck with that, Gavin.
Yeah.
But if he's going to use people like that and maybe try to use some underhanded, below the belt tactics, I kind of hope he does, because I don't think DeSantis would be the first one to do that. But if Newsom goes there, then that opens the door for DeSantis to have.
And that's, yeah, and that would be, and honestly, that's kind of what we want to see. We want to see some of that. Jennifer Van Laar, you do such a great job. We'd love to have you back, especially as we see how this Newsom thing develops. I mean, Jennifer's the go-to authority on this issue. So we appreciate you joining us today, and thank you for doing what you do. You work hard, and
you
deserve the credit for it. Thanks so much. Good to see you. We have more to come, folks, as we wrap up this third hour of broadcast. Now, knowing all that, now, how much more interesting has this debate gotten tonight? I know it's going to be very interesting to watch. So we have a lot. We're going to have a lot to feel like we're going to have a lot to recap tomorrow.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
This is Nick. Hey, Nick. This is Nick Riccardi. Now, look, my Marine carries that. It has a code to blow up the world. That doesn't. This is not nuclear weapons, is it? All right, okay.
He's against the cannon.
By the way, you think I'm kidding?
No. Now you'll hear from Democrats, oh, he's just trying to be funny. That's all it was. He's just trying to be funny. Don't take it out of... He's like, yeah, was he bragging? I'm a little confused. What was the... That was Joe Biden telling one of the guys when he was... What did he go to? He went to Colorado to make his little Bidenomics speech yesterday. And he's like, yeah, he's got a code to blow up the world. I mean, the fact that you would just... That, I don't know, man. I don't even know anymore. I don't think anybody does. I don't think anyone does. Now, tonight, we'll be watching the debate. There's not going to be a live chat for it, but I am going to have a piece coming up about it. It's going to be very interesting. I really, really want to watch it and take some notes of the broadcast, because I think there's going to be some... I want to be able to talk some... There's going to be some very interesting comment about this coming... Content from this coming out, I think. We'll have that recap for you tomorrow. Today in Stupidity, Kane.
All right. It is Karine Jean-Pierre, of course, the White House spokesperson. So today, after Kirby had made his... Oh, do you have that one? Excellent. So Kirby was making comments about the Israel-Hamas war. Uh-huh. It was time to switch over to more domestic questioning from the press pool.
Yeah.
And this is what happened.
Can I just thank you? Thank you so much.
Oh, my God.
All right, we can end this briefing if it's not going to be respectful here. Chris.
That's what I'm saying. You're receiving an African leader, and you don't take questions.
Thanks, everybody.
Simon Atiba is not happy.
Not one question from her was answered today.
Ooh. I mean, wait. She has one job, though.
Exactly.
Make sure you sign up for the newsletter. Substack, chapter and verse. Go and find it. We'll have a recap. Going to have the recap of the debate tonight and also tomorrow on air. I'll be back with you then.